strange. Hey, kids, I go on the ground, get some heavy rest. Never have to worry about what is worst or what is best. Dude.
Welcome back. It is March 7th, season 2, episode 36 of the Let Me Be Frank podcast. Brian and Pete here with you. And we have the biggest fallacy maybe ever coming to our forefront with the NFL claiming Roger Goodell runs a 5-4-1-40 in his office in a suit.
There's absolutely 0% chance that this man made it through a your run-of-the-mill office building in Skechers while wearing a suit, running a 5-4.
I've never seen the NFL building in New York. I can't imagine they have a 40-yard open stretch like that. There's no way that's 40 yards.
Yeah, what intern did he have, like, walk out that 40 yards and then have him walk back into, like, 5 yards to make sure he...
Right. Someone, all right, I have a very important task. It's coming from Commissioner Goodell. We need you to take this tape measure. Or they probably just had a ruler, a 1 foot ruler, and he has to walk the entire length of the 40 yards to figure it out.
And the thing that most bothered me about that video was that someone's like, good job, commish. And I was like, ew, you call him commish in the office?
Like, I know Goodell's in good shape and he like runs and does all that sorts of shit, but there's no way, just no way that he runs a 5-4-1-40.
All right. He had his suit coat on. It's one thing to have like suit pants on, but he had his coat on.
He was wearing a goddamn jacket. He was not going very fast. I would have paid so much money to see someone walk out in the middle of the like runway with like a bunch of papers as he was running through. That would have been the greatest video the NFL ever dropped. But back to the matter at hand. A full-blown suit. I can't even move my arms like above my shoulders when I'm wearing a suit, let alone run.
No.
Maybe it's because my suits aren't tailored properly. I don't know. But there's just no fucking way Roger Goodell can run that fast.
And he has to have like really nice-fitting suits. And a nice-fitting suit's not going to allow for a lot of motion anyways.
Exactly.
He just...
I don't know.
He had to run a 5-4-40 with like... Josh Allen arm movement, just keeping his arms right down on his side.
the Moe's.
Yeah, Moe's Schrute.
Moe's Schrute from The Office running style.
Not a great look for Josh.
But this all came about because the Combine was this weekend, and one player in particular stole the entire show, and that was Shaquem Griffin from Central Florida. The national champs, Central Florida, undefeated.
You he see put the, up- Florida, the Florida Senate bill that was passed? With a UCF national championship.
Oh, yes.
Included.
It's a very, very smart move. Griffin had 20 reps on the bench press. By the way, he has one hand. And
I'm going to ask you about that. After you spit out the rest of the numbers, I need to ask you about that.
The other one was that he ran a 4.38 40, which is the fastest on record for a linebacker and fastest on record for any player over 225 pounds.
So for the bench press, how did the prosthetic work exactly?
I saw a picture of it. It looked essentially like a pretty much just like a grip where it was kind of like a U-shaped hand went right around the bar. So he had it and then it just like fit over his nub. So he was just kind of like, it was just there really. It wasn't like gripping it, but it was just there to push it up and down. So I feel like that's a major disadvantage.
No,
like,
does this fall into the Oscar Pistorius fake leg unfair advantage?
No, because those things are like fucking gliders. You can really get going on those.
But like half,
I think this is a disadvantage for him. That's what I was going to say. I think it's a disadvantage because if you look at it, it's not like, the grip is kind of like a big part of the entire press. Like you want to have the relaxed grip, but you're in, you I would overtrust your actual hand over the prosthetic and want to like grip harder with the one hand. So it's like, how does it actually work? You know?
Now, I mean, I'm just thinking along the lines of like stabilizing it with the bar with your hands is like half the battle there. And doesn't the U make it way easier just to focus on going straight up and down?
I guess. But I think the hard part is you don't have like the feel of where your hand is. So you can't, like, you're not going to be able to keep it in a straight line like the rest of us could very easily, you know?
True. And I took a look at the actual picture of him doing the bench press. I can't, this is terrible of me thinking of this, but I immediately thought of the Mr. Krabs robot that Plankton made.
Yes, 100%. Ravioli. I was going to say that, but
it's the same hand.
I didn't want to go there. But yeah, that's exactly what I thought of. Meatball, spaghetti underneath. That's the hand I thought of, especially when I did the motion. This is bad radio because Pete and I can see each other, but I did the U-shaped motion with my hand so he could see it in the camera. But yeah, Shaquem Griffin stole the show. Josh Allen's deep ball was incredible. He can throw the ball like a mile, essentially. He is pretty much the real life Uncle Rico, where he could probably throw the ball over the mountains if he tried. But that's a combine right there. I mean, it's football players doing non-football things and doing athletic things, but they're doing non-football things.
And you know what still baffles me from the combine is that people still gain and lose full rounds draft stocks just from
millions of dollars exchange hands from
point one on their cone drill, and they drop 15, 20 picks. And like, what is it? Orlando Brown from Oklahoma just fell out of the first day.
Yeah. So I understand in situations like that, where if a guy's just terribly out of shape or something, but we'll get to, I have a stat later, a tweet later that gets into it. But when you look at like hundredths of a second to determine the difference between like a great run and a bad run, that's outrageous.
Yeah, and I know it's already been covered, you know, extensively, but the fact that they're doing all this without pads and without contacts is just
wild.
I don't know. It just blows my mind that NFL, like the highest level scouts of football, are still telling their GMs that a player has dropped a round because he looks slower on paper than they thought he was.
That's the way of the world. And then the other NFL news right now is Ed Hockley has retired. He will be replaced by his son. So arms, Sean, muscle arms.
Sean with an AW, which I don't trust.
That's a tough move.
But Sean's arms aren't nearly as large as Ed's.
Not even close.
It's a lot to live up to.
Sean wears proper fitting shirts. Ed wore the schmediums. And it was said best. I don't like to reference them very often because everybody listens to the show and it's not like a creative thing to do, but PFT tweeted out the farewell to arms, and that may have been like the most perfect tweet for Ed Hockley.
I couldn't believe it when he tweeted that, the book cover. It was unbelievable. You think Ed's more of a tricep or a bicep guy?
He's a push-ups guy. They said, I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Dean Blandino said, but they said he would just rip out like 100 push-ups before they went on the field to get his arms nice and puffed.
Actually, before the games?
Before the games, yeah. He'd just rip out a bunch of push-ups.
That kind of ruins the celebrity, like the allure of Adam. I mean, I it was just like a natural, like...
Arms have to be big in general, but like obviously you get a little extra oomph when you do all those push-ups.
But the fact that he thought about it too, I don't know, kind of ruins it for me.
That's exactly what I want, a guy wearing a way too small shirt. That's his move. That's a try hard move. I like it.
Yeah, I love how this was like the most, like, among NFL fans, this is the most like homoerotic thing we like openly talk about, is just about a 55-year-old referee's arms.
There are many 55-year-old men out there that would love for us to talk about their arms, and I don't think Ed Hockley is one of them.
That's true.
We'll move on to the NBA, where J.R. Smith got in trouble with some soup the other day. Can't even get through this seriously. He threw soup at an assistant coach, Damon Jones.
Yep.
Unbelievable. First off, that Damon Jones has a job in the NBA.
I thought it was so fitting that he threw it at Damon Jones, because yes, there's no way he commands the respect of an NBA coach.
Yes. That's my point right here by saying that I'm stunned that he even has a job. It's that I certainly would not respect Damon Jones as a coach, let alone J.R. Smith, the guy who does whatever the fuck he wants anyways. So J.R. gets suspended for throwing the soup at Damon Jones. And I mean, Soupgate has taken over the Cleveland locker room. I mean, Ty Lue is just livid right now with everything that he has to answer about soup.
You know what? I feel like J.R.'s first response to this was just like seeing all the tweets. He's like, Damon Jones is an assistant coach on this team. He's not just paid by LeBron to be here.
Yeah, that is.
But I heard, I'm hearing it's chicken tortilla, which
that's a
rough one to get spilled on you.
Yeah,
or thrown on you.
I mean, the first thing I thought of was how hot was the soup, because that's a warm soup, you know, that's going to burn. That's going to leave a mark. You're in trouble with that one. Like, depending on where you get hit with the soup, if your arm, God forbid, face, you're going to have some burns there. But
that's some visceral anger you have to actually think about tossing a hot soup, bowl of soup at someone.
Well, that also leads me to my second point, is I'm never going to say anything that can truly offend or get someone so angry like that when they're eating soup. I make a conscious decision when I walk in a room and I see someone eating soup to not get them so pissed off that they will throw that soup.
Yeah, it's a smart way to go through life, Brian.
Thank you. So JR throws the soup. The Bulls have received a warning for tanking. There are sources that say the NBA has reached out about resting healthy players like Justin Holiday and whatever Robin Lopez. This hurts because the Bulls were actually doing a really good job of tanking. They had, 28 points at halftime on Monday night and just are in a full-fledged tank. Cam Payne is leading the charge, as we had hoped, the tank commander himself. It's been going well.
I mean, I think this only – wouldn't you think this only affirms that we're doing a good job tanking?
Yeah.
I mean, what's going to happen if we get another – if so this is our first warning.
Are the tanking Bulls – okay, that was going to be my next point, but I wanted to ask, are the tanking Bulls bad for the NBA?
I mean, I would say
they're so good at being bad that the NBA has to stop them.
Yeah, I mean, they're so anti-competitive that Adam Silver is just this close to levying a fine against them for how non-competitive they are.
Yep, and so that was going to be my next question. It's kind of like you're a second semester senior in high school and you know you're just not showing up to class or doing something stupid and the teacher's like, stop it now, otherwise I'm gonna, you know, there'll be consequences. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's like
seriously,
just come to class and take the final. I won't count it, just take the final,
right?
Adam Silver is essentially just asking the Bulls to show up to the final.
Even better, he's probably just asking him to use a number two pencil instead of a number one. Like, just get a score on this test. I don't care what you do, just get a score.
Yeah, and realistically, Adam Silver just like he wants the optics to look better than they are right now because he doesn't like seeing the player reports that they're getting DMP for rest.
Yeah. I think this is where Bobby Portis needs to step up and be a team player and start punching people. If he can give them injury reasons, then, I mean, he's earning his salary for sure. Plus, the Bulls don't have to say, oh, it's just rest. You know, Robin Lopez out with a dead arm. Justin Holiday out with a broken collarbone because he got punched in the collarbone or something. Like, just let Bobby go to work.
And it's a shame that no one in the Bulls organization is as funny as like Popovich, because the Spurs used to have fun with this. Like,
yes,
Tim Duncan did not play old. Why can't Robin Lopez have DNP, got his ass beat by a mascot? No.
Well, I mean, when you look at who's running the Bulls, you've got a guy who signed a shirt about his own firing. So
I would love to see if that ever reached him.
I hope it did. I really hope it did. But
it would make my life if I found out that Garpax knew who we were.
That would be huge for the brand. Absolutely huge. They might listen, so just keep an ear out. But the final note in the NBA that I have, at least, is Bumble is going to be a sponsor for the Clippers next season. It'll be on the jersey. Hell of a move for the brand, I think, in general. Both the Clippers and Bumble. Didn't the Hawks have Tinder night a couple years ago, or what, 2 years ago?
I think the Hawks have had it a couple years ago, and they've continued it. Apparently, it was a success. And there was a couple that got married, and they met on Tinder night in Atlanta. So,
which is incredible. So I think every couple that gets married through Bumble, like from the Clippers first off should have a like promo code to get to use the, you know, on the back of the ticket. Like if the Clippers score 100 points, you get a free month of Bumble premium, whatever the fuck their premium is.
Yep.
And then you use the promo code. Every couple or all the matches, whatever it may be, they should get, you know, free jerseys or something like for their kids when they have kids or free season tickets for a year, whatever it is.
I mean, I would love, I think it's honestly
the marketing department.
I think it's an awesome idea to be honest. I think like if you have like a, I'm guessing they probably have this like a promo code you type in when you're at the game for Bumble and you only can potentially match with people also at the game. It's a perfect like opportunity to meet someone
for sure. And it makes the Clippers like a more viable option for like younger people. Like if you and I were out in LA and let's say the Clippers were in town, but we weren't really interested in going, if they have something like that, why the hell not? Like go see a game at the Staples Center. And it's not that it's like a draw, but it definitely puts you over the edge when you're thinking about it.
And think about how many celebrities go to basketball games in LA. If you have the potential to match with a Jack Nicholson, if he ever ends up at a Clippers game.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being
in mode? I think.
Yeah. It'd just be on like the potential to match with a celebrity on it would be a huge selling point.
I think the Clippers need to get to, get Lou Will on there.
That's what I'm saying.
Then all of a sudden, here we go.
Lou Will should be the brand ambassador for Bumble.
That's just smart move, easy move, really.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. And one last NBA storyline here. Did you get a chance to see the Robert Sacre dunk contest in Japan?
No, I didn't.
Just a complete lack of effort, just total apathy. he did basically a no. He tried to do a windmill dunk from just a standstill. Like he didn't even bother to like take steps to do it. Gets stuffed by the rim and then does a very half-hearted tomahawk dunk. And he got 5 nines out of it.
It was in Japan, you said?
Yeah, it was a Japanese basketball league. And it was quiet as a golf course. And he got 5 nines on this half-hearted tomahawk dunk that he literally just scoffed after he finished it.
I don't even know what to say. I have to watch this just to see what it's like, but good God. Let's get it up on Twitter. Let's retweet a video of it or something at LMBF Sports. Everyone can check it out. I need to see this. Robert Sacre. I haven't heard that name in years.
Who would have thought the Lakers number one cheerleader from 2 years ago has now ended up on the shores of Japan?
And like all the greats, he washed up on the shores of Japan, ready to play.
He was a poor, poor man's Carlos Boozer.
He was a poor man's Kwame Brown.
I mean, it's a pretty impoverished fellow if you're calling him poor man's Kwame Brown.
The last main topic we have is college basketball conference championship week has begun. We're really in week two here. The Big Ten playing during mid-major week so they could get into Madison Square Garden where Michigan ends up defeating Purdue in the championship. It was actually a pretty good Big Ten tournament, all things considered. Penn State had a nice little run. They beat Ohio State for the third time this year. Rutgers, the team I hate with all my heart, made a great run to the quarterfinals, lost in a very competitive game with Purdue, a game they probably could have and should have won. And then Obviously, Michigan stays red hot. They have not lost a game, fun fact, in the Big Ten tournament since the plane crash last season.
Ooh, that's a
team of destiny.
I like it.
Team of destiny right there.
We are Marshall.
Exactly. So,
terrible movie, by the way. I hated that movie.
Really?
I came to that movie and I didn't know what actually happened when Marshall crashed.
Oh, God.
And no, hold on. No, I knew that they like all died in the crash.
Right.
But
not all of them.
I literally, as I'm watching the Marshall, the next season would go, and like would lose like the next. I'm like, what? I thought they were going to win these games.
So you were pissed off that it was very realistic and that the team sucked when they lost all their scholarship players.
It was going to be like a Disney, like they gather up these ragtag group of guys.
Like a Remember the Titans where they went on a miracle play.
Yeah, yes.
When in actuality, they won by like 50 in the championship game.
Yeah. But reality is much, much sadder, unfortunately. And they didn't win. So a younger me left that movie theater very disappointed.
That's fair. I get that. I can totally understand that. Yeah, Michigan. They look really good. They were my pick to win the Big Ten tournament. If you listen to the B Fox and B Frank show, thank you very much. If you don't, go subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review. It's all college sports. I picked Michigan. It seems like year in and year out, the mantra is that Michigan State really gets going in March. I think it's Michigan who really gets going. They always seem to peak at this time of year. John Beilein's teams are always really good. They play good defense. This one better than many in years past. And then they've got offensive threats from all over the floor. Duncan Robinson, Mo Wagner, Charles Matthews from Chicago area. There's so many good players on this team.
Yeah, Michigan State really hot. And what do you make of Michigan State's struggles? Do you think they extend into the tournament or no?
They're such a tough team. It feels like Tom Izzo still hasn't figured out like his rotations, and there's just so much talent that they shouldn't be bad. I feel like this is a precursor for what Duke's going to have next year, because Nick Ward, Miles Bridges, and Jaren Jackson Jr. are all big men, and that's kind of, to a lesser extent, what Duke's going to have next year with Cam Reddish, Zion Williamson, etc., all coming in to play, RJ Barrett, all coming in to play the forward position. So it feels like they almost have too many riches at one position. And the biggest thing, obviously, is their turnovers. They turn the ball over so damn much. But Cassius Winston needs to take over. He needs to control the floor, control the tempo, and then get the ball to his playmakers and let them go to work.
So this doesn't seem like the final four, one of the Tom Izzo's final four teams?
I think they're still a final four team, like final four caliber.
Okay.
Do I think they get there? I have to see the matchups before I can say it, but they're absolutely a final four team, I think. You know, they're just so damn talented, and I feel like come March, talent wins out over anything. Yes, you can run into a team that gets hot, but at the same time, it's hard to see this team losing early on.
All right, we'll see.
And then the other power conferences, Big East, ACC is already underway, Pac-12, Big 12, and then the SEC. I always forget the SEC in basketball. All getting underway. All the power conferences will close up this weekend. They start today, if you're listening, Wednesday. We'll have previews up at letmebefrankblog.com for all of those, so be sure to check it out. Let us know what you think. Join in the comments. Tell us we're idiots. Tell us we're awesome. I don't care. Just start something. We'll move on to top five, which is college basketball upsets. We genuinely don't know if we've done this one before. So
it all blends together.
With it being March, we figured this would be a good, better time than any to do it.
This is March.
This is March, as John Rothstein has said probably 8 times already this month. Pete, I'll let you go first. What are your 5 favorite college basketball upsets?
All right, I'm going to go number 5, Lehigh over Duke. That was with CJ McCollum, who is now a great NBA player, which makes it even cooler. Number 4 here, Norfolk State over Mizzou. I think that was 15 over 2?
15 over 2, both Lehigh and Norfolk State.
Yeah, and then 3, George Mason over UConn. Classic. Jordan Mason was like one of the first teams I remember making, like being a younger guy. Like I had no idea what the university was.
Everyone I knew had that Final Four shirt. I was the only one at my school that did not have the Final Four shirt that had like George Mason. I don't even remember who the other three teams were. But yeah, everyone else had that shirt. I did not.
Number two, Florida Gulf Coast over Georgetown.
Dunk City.
And like, yeah, this team easily had the most entertaining like play style.
Yes, they were fast paced. They threw alley-oops almost every play. It was crazy.
And then number one, Georgia State over Baylor. I love it strictly because RJ Hunter.
Yep.
Hitting a shot and his dad falling off a scooter. It still makes me laugh to this day.
Such a crazy game. I have a couple that overlap with you. My number five is Dunk City over Georgetown. Just late in that game, Georgetown looked like they were about to take over with about 2.5 minutes left. They cut the lead to 5, I think. And then coming down on the other end of the floor, we had just an outlet pass, a great outlet pass at beating the press, and then just a behind the head lob for a one-handed tomahawk, and that just set the crowd ablaze, and that was it for Georgetown. You knew they were dead after that.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, like you just mentioned, Georgia State over Baylor. That shot is iconic. The angle where you can see both RJ and his dad shooting and then falling out of the chair simultaneously is absolutely incredible. Number three, Morehead State over Louisville. Kenneth Faried just dominating the Cardinals. Awesome, awesome game. I had that pick. I remember volleyball practice when we were trying to watch it back in the day before streaming was really a thing, trying to watch it on like the choppy ass cell phones that one of our friends had. Number two is just the George Mason run in general. Like you said, it's like one of the first true underdog runs that we can remember. So it was a pretty cool thing. And then number one, I'm going with a Fenwick grad, fellow Friar, LaSalle's 2013 Sweet 16 run. Head coach John Giannini, Fenwick guy, friend of the program, was in charge there. Langston Galloway was on the team, and they just made that run, winning two games. Awesome move. 13 seed, I believe, getting what seems like a contract for life there for him at LaSalle.
I had no idea this was a Fenwick guy.
Yes, he is. He is. So those are our top five. Let us know what you think. There are a bunch of upsets that we left off. Feel free to let us know at LMBF Sports on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just checking myself, I have no idea if Langston Galloway was actually on that team. I can't remember who it was, but there was someone good on that LaSalle team.
I believe you, Brian.
We'll move on to our stats. I've got a pair, and you know, as is tradition in March, there are always some awesome statistics that come out. None better than teams with wins in February/March, or teams that have more wins at MSG, at MSG in February and March than the Knicks. So here's the list of teams. Michigan has 4 wins. Purdue has 2. Rutgers has 2. Penn State has 2. Michigan State has 1. St. John's has 1. Seton Hall has 1. Iowa has 1. Wisconsin has 1. The Knicks have 0 since the start of February.
Oh, God. 0? I thought it was going to be at least 1.
There will be more teams added to this list as the Big East tips off today. So at least 3, if my math is right, at least 3 more teams will get on that list. Possibly more if St. John's and Seton Hall lose. But those two are truly, truly incredible, because this is everyone's favorite time of year to see how bad the New York Knicks are. And my second tweet is Dragan Bender, everyone's favorite first-round pick for the Phoenix Suns, became the first player since 2012 to play 36 minutes and attempt 1 or 0 shots and 0 free throws. This game, the stat line has happened at least once a year for the last decade.
That sounds like a Tony Snell stat.
Yes, I was going to say, this sounds exactly like Tony Snell, reminiscent of New Mexico's finest. What do you have?
I got a few. My first one, this is kind of a, it's a small sample size, but I still like seeing it. In the 115 minutes that Emeka Okafor has played for the Pelicans, their performance has been similar to a 60-win team, and their output has been on par with the 96-97 Bulls. This is according to a bunch of advanced statistics.
Emeka is a game changer. He's a leader on the floor.
He went from wearing a SpongeBob uniform in the G League to 2 months later, manning center for the New Orleans Pelicans. So
what a world.
Second one here, list of players with most catches in their age 40 season or later in the NFL. Jerry Rice is number one with 185. Brett Favre is number two with one.
Look at that. People forget Brett Favre caught a pass after 40.
And finally, the Titans played the Jaguars in week 17 of the 2011 season. When the Titans' offense left the field in the second quarter, the Jags led 14-7. The next time the Titans' offense were on the field, the Jags were up 35, or the Titans were up 35-14.
Dear God.
That was five possessions and two special teams touchdowns. There was a halftime break and then two defensive touchdowns before the offense came back on the field.
That's an easy day at the office for that Titans offense.
Nothing to it.
Absolutely nothing to it. I've got a pair of tweets, so I'll lead off. One of them, this is going back to the fractions of a second causing some sort of disruption. It's, I believe this was 40 times. I don't have it exactly, but Kevin Knight, I don't know who this guy is. He tweeted, Minkah Fitzpatrick with a 4.47 is pretty darn fast for a safety. I'd have to assume it's a 40 time. Then Derwin James, Florida State safety, with a 4.48 40. Good, not great time. One 100th of a second.
That's where he drew the line, Brian.
That's where you draw the line. Apparently 4.48 is good, not great, but... and it rhymes, so that's fucking awesome, actually. So I'm all in on that. I changed my mind. I'm in on this guy. 4.47 is pretty darn fast. So if we're looking at a chart like Tom Herman's piss chart, it's 4.47, pretty darn fast. 4.48, good, not great. You guys know.
That's fair.
And then
reasonable.
The last tweet I have is from Jimmy Traina, who's an SI writer. I asked Bill Raftery today if he's ever thought about joining Twitter. His outstanding response was no, and I'll tell you why. Because at 11:30 at night, when I've had my 10th drink, I'm liable to say something that will cost me my job. I just needed to bring this up because I fucking love Bill Raftery. I call him my grandpa, partly as a joke, but also because I don't have any grandparents, so I get to call him whenever I want, like every 2 weeks or so, and just shoot the shit about basketball and life. So he kind of is like my grandpa at this point.
And we need to call and get him on the phone after his 10th drink and see what he has to say.
Oh, yes. We need to go have a 10th drink with Bill Raftery. That's what we need.
Oh, even better.
Yes. So what tweets do you have?
I just got one. I have a lot of questions. So this tweet came from Alvaro Martin from ESPN Deportes. And he reported that J.R. Smith attempted to boycott practice after finding out Rodney Hood would start over him. I have a few questions here. Why is ESPN Deportes getting the scoop on J.R. Smith boycotting practice? And also, I'm just imagining J.R. just picketing outside, like SpongeBob, outside of the Krusty
Tyron Lue is unfair.
Just a one-man picket.
Standing at the concession, plotting his oppression. Wendy's got to be in deep with some cartel members or something. That's why ESPN Deportes is getting this scoop. I don't know what else. Yeah, I don't know what else is going on there. That's not to imply anything. That's just saying. Wendy is the guy with the scoops on the Cavs. I don't know where or why. It got to ESPN Deportes. Maybe he just texted the wrong person in his phone. I mean, that's pretty easy too. But you never know. You never know with Brian Windhorst. He made a whole career following an 18-year-old kid.
I also think boycott is the right word here because isn't one person lead? Isn't that just skipping practice?
Yeah. I think JR looked up like a word in the dictionary. He's like, oh, boycott, that looks good. Or no, he looked up just like any word that was a synonym of boycott, and then was like, all right, I need to find a good synonym. So he goes to the thesaurus, or probably just right clicks and is like, okay, boycott works. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, it's only funny to me because JR did it. So
absolutely. I don't think it'd be funny if anyone else had done that, but
he locks the doors, keeps everyone else from going to practice.
That would be goes Coach Carter, like, until you guys get your grades up, until I start, you know, we're not practicing. He just chains up the entire building. It's like, JR, you're gonna need a lot more chains than that.
Guys, we're doing a walkout. This is unfair.
Yes, because you're not starting because you threw a bowl of soup at someone doesn't mean that we're all walking out. And then
workers' rights. We demand to be compensated fairly.
I'm going to go talk to my union. And as we close up every week, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
Selection Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know that Thursday is coming up and that I'm just going to sit and watch basketball all day.
There you go. I'm with you. Big East tournament, obviously. I'll say it here on these airwaves. I've said it before, but I think if Seton Hall gets a rematch with Villanova at MSG, we win that game. However, I didn't predict them to win in our Big East preview. So call me what you want, but I think Seton Hall wins that game if they get a rematch. And then obviously Selection Sunday. It's my favorite Sunday of the year. Masters Sunday is probably my second, but this is what it's all about. This is what I live for. College basketball is my favorite sport, and I need to see the brackets as they come out.
I don't like how they're doing it alphabetically this year.
I don't like how don't even get me started. They're doing a lot of crazy shit. The whole two-hour thing is absurd. It should be no more than 30 minutes. Like, just unveil the teams and then have an after show where you talk about the matchups and stuff like that. That's what people will actually care about, is if you do each individually. Everyone just wants to see the damn thing.
Yep.
As always, you can check us out, letmebefrankblog.com, at LMBF Sports, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and follow us, please. We tweet some good stuff, especially Instagram. The videos are hilarious. And then check out the blog and subscribe, share with your friends, leave a 5-star review on iTunes, and we will see y'all next week.